We have a good number present this morning and lots of visitors. We are particularly appreciative of your presence here. Hope that you'll find our time together edifying, that you'll be encouraged by the worship that we engage in together. We invite you to come back. It is so good to see Linda here this morning. I don't see Linda. She's back in the nursery, I guess. She's been a lot of pain. The surgery has not been as easy a recover as I think was expected. And so it's good that she's able to get out and to be with us. It's that time of year again, isn't it? It's that time of year when we start to hear the following statements. Let's put Christ back into Christmas. Let's stop making Christmas a commercial holiday. After all, Jesus is the reason for the season. Probably all of you have heard those comments, or you've heard the expression, the Christmas Wars. Those are not wars that are being fought in other parts of the country, or other parts of the globe, rather, at the time of Christmas, but it just refers to the fact that every year, there are some religious groups who lament the commercialization and the secularization of the Christmas holiday. Some retailers in more recent years, in order to remain politically correct, have dropped Merry Christmas from their advertising and other forms of communication in favor of Happy Holidays, so that they don't offend anybody who may not practice Christianity or who may not observe the holiday of Christmas. And some people are anxious to boycott those retailers, to teach them that they need to keep Christ in Christmas. In fact, the American Family Association, a religious group, or a group with religious convictions, began selling buttons as early as October that said, it's okay to say Merry Christmas. Your button says that. So people know that you'll not be offended if they say Merry Christmas to you. In fact, this is the time of year when there are often debates and sometimes even legal action about the display of religious symbols like the creche, representation of the nativity scene with statues or figurines. But the thing that's got some people really riled up is an atheistic ad campaign that is continuing right now in Washington, D.C. The American Humanist Association is spending $40,000 to advertise on the buses, the metro buses in Washington, D.C. And they put signs on city buses like this bus that say, why believe in God? Just be good for goodness sake. Grabbing a lyric from the song, Santa Claus is Coming to Town. And that's not a new thing. If you went to London, you might see a bus that looked like this, that had a sign on the side that says, there's probably no God. Now stop worrying and get on with your life. And those ads really have gotten some religious folks upset. Probably the sting of the ad, and particularly the one that is now being used in Washington, D.C. By the humanists, is that it comes at a time when so many people are celebrating the birth of Christ. I'm not sure I have a short sermon. I think Randy talked to our other preacher when he said that he'd talk to me about the short sermon. But I do ask your indulgence, at least for a few moments, while we talk about what I've entitled, Putting Christ Back into Christmas. I think there are some dangers out there for us. And while I feel, as I prepared the material for this morning, that I'm not going to cover some things that you want to hear or that you have to ask about. Because I want to zone in on a particular point, and I'm going to try to be as precise in my surgery as possible. And so I'm going to be very quick about these objectives. And the first one is, I want to talk about the relationship of Christ to Christmas. I hope that we're all clear about that, but just in case, might be good for us to be reminded of that. And secondly, I want to talk about the danger of superficial religion. I want to begin by looking at everything that the Bible has to say about Christmas. Okay, that's it. It says absolutely nothing about Christmas. But wait, someone says, wait, Christmas is about the birth of Christ. And our esteemed scripture reader read from Luke chapter 2, verses 1 through 7, an account in Luke's gospel of the birth of Christ. Thank you for playing, but Christmas is a celebration of the birth of Christ. Nobody would deny that the Bible talks about the birth of Jesus Christ. Nobody would deny that the birth of Christ was an exciting and joyous event, especially since it heralded blessings that the Jewish people had been waiting for a long time. That's not Christmas. Christmas is a holiday that has been invented to celebrate that event. And about that holiday, the scriptures say nothing. This could be a short sermon if we stopped right now. But we never do, do we? The scriptures, the Gospels of Matthew and Luke, do contain accounts of the birth of Christ. You know what's interesting, though? There are four Gospels. That comes as a surprise to some of you, perhaps. And two of those Gospels, Mark and John, don't say a word directly about the birth of Jesus Christ. Isn't that fascinating? Since Christmas is such an important holiday, according to so many religious people, if His birth is to be celebrated with this importance, why is it that half of the Gospels don't have anything to say about it? Don't even record it? Well, the truth about Christmas is, as Philip Schaff says, and Philip Schaff is a noted historian, has written an extensive history of the Christian church. That's the title of his work, several volumes. Here's what he says about this particular holiday. He says, notwithstanding this deep significance and wide popularity, the festival of the birth of the Lord is of comparatively late institution. Now, I want you to remember that phrase, and so I put it up on the board, of comparatively late, that says last, late institution. Apparently my computer is acting up again. Because we're going to come back to that in just a few moments. But listen to another historian. This is actually the Catholic Encyclopedia 1911 edition. Here's what they say, that Christmas was not among the earliest festivals. What we do know from ancient historians is that the Greeks and the Romans did celebrate some pagan festivals right around this particular time that is now celebrated as Christmas, right around the 25th of December. Some rather raucous feasts in which there was a lot of merrymaking and some evil that was associated. But the fact of the matter is, Christmas, the celebration of the birth of Jesus Christ, wasn't adopted by the apostate church by this time until A.D. 354. Now, I want you to look back at the quotation from Philip Schaff and note that he says that it came of comparatively late institution. Isn't that interesting? 354 is a lot closer to the first century than it is to us, isn't it? But you know what he's saying? He's saying that when you look at the time of the apostles and the inspired writers of the New Testament, it was all written, inspiration had ceased long before this festival got started. That's what Philip Schaff is talking about. And so in terms of the first century, Christmas takes a while to show up, doesn't it? Doesn't show up until the middle of the fourth century. Now, there may be somebody here who says, oh, I don't believe that. Do your own research. This is everywhere. This isn't disputed. The question of whether or not we celebrate Christmas may be another question, but the issue of its origin is indisputable. It is not in the Bible. It is a holiday that was invented by men, and particularly by religious individuals, for reasons I'm not going to go into this morning. They're not significant for our study. But it raises the question then, this business of putting Christ back into Christmas. Why would we want to do that? Since it's very clear from what we've seen already, just what little things we've noticed, that Jesus never had any connection to Christmas in the first place. He was never in Christmas, except where people put him and without authority. But I'll tell you something. If you oppose Christmas as a religious holiday, you need to be prepared. Because there are just a whole lot of religious people in our country who are going to think you're some sort of nut. Some sort of religious cult or something. Don't celebrate Christmas. Your church doesn't have a pageant. Where's the nativity scene out in front of your building? That's nuts, isn't it? Not celebrating Christmas as the birth of Christ. Are you all just really atheists? But the issue is, what does the Bible have to say about Christmas? And the answer is absolutely nothing. And so anything that has been developed over the centuries, and Christmas really is a composite of a lot of different pagan rituals and symbols that have essentially, if you'll pardon the pun, have been baptized, Christianized, and adapted for the use of religious people so they don't have to talk about paganism. The birth of Jesus Christ received attention because of the blessings that attended the advent of the Messiah. But the focus in the New Testament is not on his birth, it's on his death. Because it is the death of Jesus Christ that provides the sacrifice, the payment for sin, as Craig said so well before the Lord's Supper. And it's for that reason that the Lord has instructed us to remember his death. We have instructions for that, the Lord's Supper, and not a memorial of his birth. But I want to talk to you about fighting the wrong battle. In light of the historical origin of Christmas, I have to tell you, I feel no obligation to enter into the Christmas wars. I don't care who wins. I really don't. I'm not offended by anybody who says to me, happy holidays rather than Merry Christmas. I don't assume that they're an atheist. I don't assume that they're somehow rejecting Jesus Christ. Doesn't bother me a bit. I don't feel threatened as a Christian if the city or the county decides that there's no manger scenes that can be displayed on government property. That really riles Christians. It doesn't bother me a bit. Because I've just flat decided not to participate in the Christmas wars. For the simple reason that Jesus was never associated with Christmas in the Bible. Because there wasn't any Christmas in the Bible. Some of you may remember a fellow by the name of Roy Moore. He hasn't been in the news too much recently, at least not that I've noticed. Roy Moore was an Alabama judge who became a rather influential judge in Alabama, Chief Justice. And he became well known for his defense of the display of the Ten Commandments in courthouses. Without getting into all of the issues involved, and there were some other issues besides the issue of free exercise of religion, I believe. Nevertheless, he's removed from his seat, he was, because he defied a court order to remove a display that he'd set up in a courthouse. Now, setting aside just for the moment the fact that, and the very important fact, that we're not living under the Mosaic Law, which means we're not really under the Ten Commandments. We're under whatever commandments the Lord has given us. And those same 10 minus 1 are scattered throughout the New Testament in direct or indirect language. But just setting aside for the moment that we're really not under the Ten Commandments, I believe he was fighting the wrong battle. Well, now there's heresy. What do you got against the Ten Commandments? Don't you think we ought to be free to exercise, practice our own religion without any fear of governmental interference? You know, the problem here is that some people were acting, and still do, as though if we can't post the Ten Commandments, somehow that's the equivalent of no freedom to exercise religion. And that's a fallacy. The fact of the matter is, you and I have continued to exercise our religion, our faith, freely the whole time that Judge Roy Moore was fighting against other justices and other civil bodies and ended up being dethroned. Didn't bother me. I still practiced my faith freely, as in fact was guaranteed to me, is guaranteed to me by the Bill of Rights. If the government in our country adopts the policy that there is to be no public mention of God or the Bible, will it stop you from serving God? Will you just quit? Can't serve God unless we can put up a nativity scene up on the courthouse lawn. Can't pray to God unless we can do it right before the high school commencement or at the beginning of a sports event. Is that true? Well, of course not. Now, I understand the argument, albeit I'm not all that sympathetic to it, but I understand the argument that some people will make that what's happening here is that our country is moving away from Christianity. We've really moved into a pagan phase, certainly a secular phase, and some would argue even a pagan culture. Well, I think that's probably true. But there's a danger in assuming that all of a sudden my faith is under attack because I can't publicly put out a symbol of my faith. That's the point I want to make today. You know, in the second century, the government did say, no Christians. You're not legal. Your religion is not legal. And Christians still practice their faith. They didn't have the freedom that you and I have as guaranteed by our own Constitution at this point. Although the Constitution is a government that frankly can be set aside if enough people decide to do it. Or people in the right position. But at least for the present, we have that freedom. We have that right. But you know, they didn't have it in the second century and even in the third century. It wasn't until the beginning or the first part of the fourth century that Christianity became a legal religion and could be practiced freely and openly without fear of some sort of government repercussion. And Christians still practiced their faith. Some of them died. Many of them suffered things short of death. But you know what? Didn't make any difference to a lot of them whether the government approved of it or not, whether the government allowed them to do it openly or not. They still served God. Will we be stopped by whatever kind of prohibitions local governments or the national government might put out? Now, here's the point. I want to know what good it does to display the Ten Commandments in a courthouse if nobody's living by them. Is that really the strength of religion? Is putting up a sign that has a bunch of moral standards while in our schools we teach people that they're evolved animals, while churches are basically practicing situation ethics, nobody's speaking against divorce as the Bible teaches about divorce and particularly the permanence of marriage. What good does it do us to post the Ten Commandments to display a standard of morality if we're not going to live it? Seems to me like that's just window dressing. And you can read about that in your Old Testament. I'm not going to do that this morning because I told Randy I was going to have a short sermon. But you can. The prophets talked about the Israelites all the time and their window dressing religion. And God punished them for it. I just wonder, are we fighting the wrong battle when we're struggling for the right to display religious symbols or religious sentiments in public or on government property? Is that really where we want to expend our time and our effort and our assets? And sometimes thousands of dollars are used to try to defend the right to put a creche or a nativity scene in front of a government building. And people are consumed with those kinds of issues. while our society is morally going down the drain. Could it be that we're fighting the wrong battle? Some of the same groups who are fighting so feverishly for the public display of religious symbols of Christianity have sacrificed their young people to Satan by failing to teach them to keep the Ten Commandments, those who think that they're still responsible to them. I believe that the danger for Christians, that the danger for us, is that if we're not careful, our religion, and by that I simply mean our commitment to God and His Word, extends no further than some superficial religious symbol like a manger scene or a cross on a necklace. And what happens sometimes is people begin to feel that in some way they're close to God because they've got some of the trappings of religion. And so they fight to be able to display the trappings and miss the weightier matters of the law. Some of you recognize that's from Matthew 23. Is that the essence of our religion? Is our relationship to God so superficial that it can be satisfied with wearing a t-shirt with a religious message on it? You know, that's a battle that's going on in schools now. Parents are suing schools. Kids are being thrown out of schools because they've got to wear a shirt that says something religious. Can't let the school quash my religion. Is that your religion? The wearing of a t-shirt with a religious message on it? Is that the sum total of our religion? That seems awful superficial to me. Shallow. Is our religion so shallow that it basically consists of a bumper sticker on our car but fails to transform us into the image of Christ? Now let me clarify something because I don't want to be misunderstood. I don't think there's anything wrong with wearing a t-shirt that has a religious message on it. I do that from time to time. I don't think there's anything wrong with wearing or having religious... You don't have to wear bumper stickers. Usually you put them on your car, but whatever, you know, floats your boat. But I don't have any problem with you putting a bumper sticker, a religious bumper sticker on your car. It'd probably be better than the one I've got about my wife and my dog. I'll not repeat that for fear of being beaten again. But there's nothing wrong with that. I don't think it's wrong for you to wear a cross on a necklace. My point is that if that's the sum total of our religion, then that's just window dressing. That's not what our relationship with God is designed to be. That's just appearance. That's just display. That's just symbols. Unfortunately, many people, many religious people, and I'm afraid maybe some Christians even, are satisfied with just kind of a warm, fuzzy feeling about God and maybe some vague ideas about being a disciple of Jesus Christ, but nothing substantial, very little foundation in the Scriptures. Our religion is just for show. And my impression from the Scriptures is that God doesn't care anything about that. That it doesn't impress him at all. This is the danger that I want to warn us about. I don't have any problem with symbols. But I'm just afraid sometimes we're fighting the wrong battle. When we ought to be working to create a nation that is founded on moral principles, we're worried about who's going to get the biggest bucket of chaff. And that's pointless. We don't have the energy as a group, as a people, as individuals, to do all of the work that we can do in terms of evangelism and self-transformation to be fooling around with some of the issues that people argue about to no avail. Don't participate in the Christmas wars. It's a waste of time. Well, I'll try to be true to my word. What have we concluded this morning? I think two quick things. Christ has no biblical connection to Christmas. So don't bother putting him back into Christmas. He was never there to begin with. And then, of course, in light of the origin of Christmas, I would encourage Christians to avoid celebrating the day as the birth of Christ. Oh, there's a whole host of issues we could talk about. Can I put up a tree? Is it okay to give gifts? Can we kiss under the mistletoe? That last one is the one Deb's concerned about. And there's all kinds of questions that we could talk about. That's not my point this morning. Please understand, I'm not trying to answer all the questions. I just want this to be clear, that the Bible says nothing about us observing Christmas, celebrating the birth of Jesus Christ, and I believe we do so to our peril. Now, there are some secular practices that I don't believe have any religious significance. If you want to practice those things, go right ahead. But this is more important. Our religion must not consist of mere symbols. It needs to be a committed, devoted, intimate relationship with God. And that, frankly, is founded primarily on God's Word, not on symbols. So much work to be done in evangelism. I wonder if we've got time to worry about whether the Ten Commandments are posted in a courthouse. Love for Jesus is not manifest by the wearing of a religious slogan on a button or a t-shirt. I love Jesus. That's how people know you're a Christian, because you got the shirt that says, I love Jesus. Jesus boiled it down, as he so frequently did, in the Gospel of John, in chapter 14, three times inside of 10 verses. He says, if you love me, keep my commandments. You want to know who it is that loves Jesus? It's not the one that's got the bumper sticker that says, God is my co-pilot. Or the one who says, I love Jesus on a t-shirt. Or has got a cross dangling from her ear. The one who loves Jesus is the one who's doing his commandments. John 14, 15, verse 21 and verse 23. Jesus turns it around, but all three times he connects obedience to love. I love the story of Mary and Martha. And I've tried to take this principle this morning and make an application of it in this matter. Martha's busy serving, and she's upset that Mary is sitting at the feet of Jesus listening to the teacher. And she complains. And Jesus' comment is, but one thing is needed, and Mary has chosen that good part, which will not be taken away from her. And I guess the important lesson here is, there are certain things that are just more important. Symbols are way down the line. But obedience to God is right at the top. And that's how we become Christians. Is our response to God's message. Do you love Him? If you love Him, then don't keep Him waiting. Let's stand and sing.